we want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also check us out on the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday at 6 a.m. on 107.1 xray.fm.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we are out here.
Yeah.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
That one.
Catch us at the house party.
We there too.
YouTube, Twitch. Black Planet, MySpace, Tinder, Catches Ticking on the Talk, and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Candace Owens' RNC snub. We also have a segment from the panel discussion hosted by Sam Thompson featuring Deshaun Hardy and Royal Harris on location in front of Geneva's Sheer Perfection.
PDX cops decide to take a more hands-off approach with the right-wing protesters over this past weekend. Kellyanne Conway decides it's time to dip from the White House right before the election.
But first, let's jump into Hillsborough opens homeless shelter at the fairgrounds. Thousands of unhoused people live in Washington County. County officials hope Safe Sleep Village will help prevent a coronavirus outbreak in a vulnerable homeless population. A risk that will require public health officials' attention well into winter, as cold weather prompts the need for indoor sheltering. Meanwhile, housing experts warn economic stress as a result of the pandemic could trigger a sharp increase in homelessness. By June, temporary indoor homeless shelters in Beaverton and Hillsborough had closed. The county opened the temporary shelters in April to provide services to unhoused people as COVID-19 cases rose and other service providers and public housing buildings shut their doors. Although the shelter served 162 particularly vulnerable people, such as the elderly and those with health conditions, four unofficial camps on public property in Hillsborough and unincorporated county land grew during late spring. Safe Sleep Village opened in early August, providing space for 50 tents with ample separation and using a nearby county building to provide bathrooms, showers, and three meals a day. It's scheduled to close December 1st, when county officials will work to transition campers into five winter shelters across the county. A man named Lazat said, "You don't get harassed by the cops. Come in here, I get a hot shower, three meals a day, which for a lot of homeless, that's hard to do. It's safety." Adding that he doesn't worry about his belongings getting stolen. But things are starting to look up. He said he's been working 20 to 30 hours a week at a gas station, and he's trying to acquire housing with the help of Luke Dorf, a Tiger-based mental health service and outpatient treatment agency. "If it wasn't for this place opening up, I don't know where I'd be," Laza said of Safe Sleep Village. Mary Cool, director of the County Department of Health and Human Services, says if Sleep Safe Village reaches capacity and there are still unofficial camps that pose a risk for COVID-19 spreading, the county would consider expanding the operation. If unofficial camps continue to pose a risk and people are unwilling to transition into available facilities, the county will work with law enforcement partners to clear people out of the camps. The Hillsborough Police Department already has cleared people out of several camps on public property, including at Dairy Creek Park, giving them multiple weeks of notice and pointing them to resources such as Safe Sleep Village, said Eric Bundy, spokesman for the department. "Our goal is to connect them to services," Bundy said. "They are illegal camps." Marshall says Safe Sleep Village staff have been working with campers, many of whom are known to staff from the winter shelter, at other unofficial locations to encourage them to transition to Safe Sleep Village.
Man, I always think about it as, you know, as temperature starts getting colder.
Right.
It's no joke out there. Climate change has definitely given us more harsher winters.
Yes.
And, you know, with the COVID pandemic and, you know, people losing their jobs and not being able to go to work and then these evictions around the corner, like the houseless population is definitely about to change straight up.
In addition to that, there's some things I've been seeing that have been kind of troubling. I've seen some photos throughout the country of overpasses. You know how they have like pigeon spikes?
Yep.
On top of billboards and at the base of billboards? They're doing that under overpasses.
Yeah.
So that that's people can't cool, shelter.
Dude. Not cool. Like straight up.
The money that went into making that is...
Yeah, money that could have put in the housing.
Exacto mundo.
Precisely, precisely. I don't know, man. I don't know what it's going to take, but we gotta start thinking about each other and like caring about each other a lot better than we're doing right now, because this ain't it.
Straight up.
I agree.
Yeah. But in some more uplifting and exciting news, Kellyanne Conway and husband George Conway decide to step away from their work in the political arena to spend more time with their kids.
Hey, I'm for that.
Hey, I'm sure you're wondering why these names sound familiar or why this is of any importance. Kellyanne is the one responsible for the term alternative facts. Appearance after appearance on network news, Kellyanne could often be seen doing all manner of backflips to defend the president. Mm. While on the other end of the spectrum, her husband, George, would often be the source of the president's harsh criticism. As a part of the Lincoln Project, an anti-Trump American Political Action Committee formed in late 2019 by several current and former Republicans, Kellyanne stated, "I will be transitioning from the White House at the end of the month. George is also making changes. We disagree about plenty, but we're united on what matters most, the kids. Our four children are teens and tweens, starting a new academic year in middle school and high school, remotely from home, for at least a few months. As millions of parents nationwide know, kids doing school from home requires a level of attention and vigilance that is unusual at these times. Although scheduled to speak at this week's Republican National Convention, it's unclear if Kellyanne will make an appearance. George Conway tweeted Sunday evening, "So I'm withdrawing from the Lincoln Project to devote more time to family matters, and I'll be taking a Twitter hiatus. Needless to say, I continue to support the Lincoln Project and its mission passionately." She will not be missed.
Alternative facts. I mean, like, this whole story. Alternative facts. Tell the truth, Kellyanne Conway. Your Look, one thing Con. I want to make sure to that she highlighted is we may agree or disagree on many things, but the thing we do agree on is our kids. What? I feel like you shouldn't put that in the news headline, ma'am.
Like, but I mean, like, it's pretty public. They've been asking her about her husband's opinions a lot. Like, they from the rip. Like, he was so critical. Coming like the first year,
okay,
of Trump's term,
okay,
it's nothing. They will always ask. It got to the point where they just stopped asking her because, what else she gonna say? I'm just glad we got the cons out of the way.
And I definitely feel like he likes the WAP song. She doesn't, but that's for another.
You know
conversation.
What? I feel like you might could be right.
Yeah,
I feel like you might could be right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, in the same arena. Did the RNC snub Candace Owens?
Ooh.
Some Twitter users took notice after political activist and social media influencer Candace Owens was not included on the list of people speaking at the Republican National Committee, slated to kick off Monday. Owens, a black conservative, quickly became a top trending Twitter topic on the mini blog, amassing more than 25,000 mentions. Owens has been an open supporter of President Donald Trump and created Blexit, a movement that wants to discourage black Americans from voting with the Democratic Party. If she did have the chance to appear, Owens says she would have crushed former President Barack Obama, who was openly critical of Trump during the DNC last week. Owens was responding to a tweet penned by comedian Tom Dillon, who argued the Blexit leader deserved to be speaking over former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley and his youngest daughter, Tiffany Trump. Gabbard campaigned to win the Democratic presidential nomination, remaining in the race until March 2020. Gabbard confirmed she was not invited to speak at the DNC, as noted by Newsweek. "They put in such hard work uplifting the GOP that I was almost certain they'd be rewarded with some prominent recognition at the RNC. Let's also not forget that the value of added diversity," she tweeted. "Maybe I'm off about this, but when 50% of the key speakers at your convention are you or directly related to you, isn't that a problem?"
Shots fired.
I mean.
Shots fired.
Hey, why not bring your team? Like, I mean, why not
everybody?
Bring your sand to the beach? Pretty sure
all
that's
DNA.
What the kids say.
All DNA, everything at the convention. Like, what are we doing? Like, yo, Candace, like, bruh, Trump is on record as one of the most disloyal people in politics. Because he's not even supposed to be in politics,
not
period.
At all.
You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, he's racist. So you're getting what you deserve if he even sided with this dude. Like,
I concur.
Come on, man. Like, get out of here.
I concur.
She's a full cornball. And you know what? Honestly, she's been receiving a lot of support, brand new support within the black community based on people that don't understand she's an actress. She doesn't really believe the stuff she's saying.
Okay.
She flip-flops and is just like, nah, like, stop it.
Okay.
These are the same people that have found a way for Kanye to make sense for them.
Gotcha.
Like, stop it. Stop it, please. Like, come on, man. Check y'all sources. And yeah, keep it pushing. Just keep it pushing. I'm glad she's, you know, getting snubbed.
Out of there.
But for her to be like, she would have took out Obama.
Right.
What are you talking about? He's a ninja. He's a ninja when it comes to these speeches. All you're going to do is talk real fast and wait for applause.
That part.
That's all you do. Like, man, if you're going to go somewhere.
Several seats.
Several.
On clearance.
Up next. Portland cops stand by as group of protesters clash with guns and smoke bombs. Mm. During the 86th day of protests here in Portland, there were at least 2 hours worth of gunplay down at the Black and Blue rally in front of the Multnomah County Justice Center. Over 100 far-right activists, including members of the Proud Boys, came face mask to face mask with the anti-fascist group Antifa. The police described it as a riot, but decided this was a riot best viewed from the sidelines. They chose not to intervene. The following statement was issued by the Portland Police Bureau. Each skirmish appeared to involve willing participants. The events were not enduring in time, so officers were not deployed to intervene. PPB members have been the focus of over 80 days of violent actions directed at the police, which is a major consideration for determining if police resources are necessary to interject between two groups with individuals who appear to be willingly engaging in physical confrontations for short durations. The statement continues, while the activity in the group met the definition of a riot, PPB did not declare one because there were not adequate police resources available to address such a declaration. Police said both sides were armed with everything ranging from paintball guns, aluminum bats, metal rods, fireworks, rocks, and bottles filled with chemicals. A video hit social media showing a member of the pro-police group pointing a gun at protesters, and a separate video showing a Proud Boy punching a woman, knocking her to the ground. But police said there was violence on both sides. We are investigating criminal acts when we are aware of them and ask for any victims to come forward so we can build the best case we can for enhanced outcomes of prosecution. Portland Police Chief Chuck Lavelle.
So, old boy was out there with the whole Pony Express pistol.
You seen it?
With the revolver, finger though on the trigger, not even in a stand down position.
No, his, right.
And the pen was definitely back.
Bruh.
The hammy was backy.
Yeah. He was definitely trying to rob people of their saddlebags.
That part. Like, and he probably had dysentery and definitely was trying to stop the Oregon Trail from ever happening.
Out clearly. There looking like a whole Confederate soldier. What are you doing with that firearm, sir?
That part.
Why are you? And this is the crazy part, right?
Yes.
Like, so you out there and you're pointing a gun. Had someone just shot him?
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're well within your rights. If someone's aiming a gun at you,
yeah,
you can just shoot at them.
Yeah.
So had someone shot him, then he'd be like, oh my God, why'd you shoot me?
That part.
Like, you ain't just have a whole revolver.
With your hand like, on the trigger.
Yo, it's wild.
Or finger.
It's wild. So, like, you know, months of protests, these cops out here going hard, you know, completely armed, full tactical wear.
Yeah.
And now that a pro-police group is out there with munitions, they declare it a riot, but they like, but we cool, though. It's not a riot. Yeah. It's not a riot.
It ain't a riot. Riot. It's more like, it's a quiet riot, which is more like a quarrel. So it's a quarrel happening right now.
And with willing participants on both sides.
Plus, we tired from last night because last night we had to do some things. So we tired today from last night.
How was it even a factor that there's willing participants on both sides? How was that part of the, like, who cares? Who cares? They LARPing? That's what they did.
That's what it was. They were LARPing. They were LARPing. Live action role playing for the listeners that don't know the terminology.
My God.
Well, up next, we have a segment from a discussion featuring Black Men and Women United members Sam Thompson, Deshaun Hardy, and Royal Harris.
All right, what's up, everybody, man? This is your guy, Sam Thompson, on location at Geneva's on MLK. Newly purchased and ran by my guy, David Ferguson, man, keeping the black dollar rotating. But what we're here doing on the numbers today is continuing a conversation. I know many of you seen a rant from me the other day talking about things that we need to touch on in our community, the work that we need to do, talked about the six pillars of work, youth empowerment, and the things like that. And so today we wanted to get on the numbers and start up a conversation with a group of people to talk about the steps that we need to make, the action-based strategies and solutions, what we're doing. And so without any further ado, I will let you guys know who we have here with us. First up is my guy, Royal Harris.
How you do, sir?
Good. If you know Royal, man, Royal is very, very in touch with a lot of things that's happening in our community, well-versed in putting together strategies and making work happen in our community. Royal, can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do?
In my day job, I work for the Multnomah County Health Department as a program coordinator in the Healthy Birth Initiative Father Involvement Program. And once my day is over, I am a community strategist. I take all the work I've done working with public institutions, private institutions, nonprofits, developing programs and strategies to help programs grow, or to how to evaluate programs and make sure they work right, and bringing that to the community so we can really do the work instead of talking about how to do the work.
That's it. Very needed. And next on the panel we have with us with this discussion is Mr. Deshaun Hardy. Deshaun, what's up, man? Tell us a little bit about what you do here in this community.
Man, I just filling the gaps, right? And just coming out and making sure that this community is set, not just for us, but for people come after us, and making sure that we all collectively together and doing this. So I appreciate being here.
As you guys know, we have been meeting weekly for the last few weeks with the Black Men and Women United at Wilshire Park, 6 p.m. After our first meeting, a meeting didn't fall like that. Brother Love and his crew, Dre, Marte, Kiki, and others, put together the We're Gonna Be I-Ite, a march that came from King to Peninsula. And with all of these great things happening, it's been a lot of work happening. So here we are right now to have this conversation. So just to give you guys a little bit, we talked about the six pillars of work. We're going to get into that, and we're going to talk about the youth empowerment and the changing of the guard with leadership and organization. And what we want to be clear with, we're not focused as much on leadership, because that happens naturally. We don't think that we need more leaders. We need more organization. So I want to talk with you guys about, how do you feel about Deshaun? What do you feel about some of the work that we're doing and the work that needs to be done?
Well, I feel this is a ideal time for this work. If you look at it, it was like a perfect storm almost, with COVID, being everybody in the house, having the situations happen, and people having to see the situations and then make change. So I think that's why you saw it explode like it did across the world, you know, where you're having marches in Ireland and Australia and everywhere else. So I think it is needed, but now we're coming to a point to where I believe that we saw it, it's had that excitement, but now we have to push through that point of where in the past it's dropped off and then, you know, back to business as usual. We can't let that happen. So we have to continue to push this, like with the six pillars of work, bringing our communities together, and also just really sitting at those tables to make sure those changes are going to happen.
Right. And so a lot of times in this stuff, we get stagnant. So, Royal, what do you think we need to do to push through, like Deshaun said, with as parts of getting stagnant in this work?
I think the biggest thing is to have a structured plan. I mean, I think too often we work off passion, which is cool in that immediate moment, but when that wears off and then it's time to do the unflattering work or the unglamorous work, or sometimes that work's going to take 1, 3, 5 years. People don't see themselves committed to that kind of long-term involvement for change. So it's really started. So I think right now what this has proven to people, by even us being in day 75 of this protest, is that if people commit over time, that they can see that investment. But I think it's also brought in a new generation. Like for me, my generation, we had the Rodney King events and stuff like that when I was in early 20s. And I think because of social media, because of so many more vehicles, because of technology, it allows people to have a voice and kind of aggregate the number of people they can really touch. I think about working with Brother Love on the march and just looking at how the use of social media allowed us to get people and resources that we never really would have got back in the day. So I think that's one of the things keeping people involved. But now it's okay, now that I have you involved, how do I put you in a way to work in a way that keeps you motivated and keeps your eyes on the prize, but also understanding it's a journey.
Talking about the voices of our community, as we know, we've all grown up here. Portland natives, been here our whole life. For the last 30 plus years, it's been the same voices, the same faces, it's been the same tactics of trying to relay a message that's for everybody when the message is coming from a select few. What do you guys think that we need to do going forward to make sure that when we do sit at these tables, we are talking about the collective interests of the whole community? We're talking about pushing things, like you said, that are not just for our affirmation for certain groups or because we're getting funding from certain situations or certain areas. What do we have to do, number one, to step into these spaces of organizational leadership and then pull out and bring the message of all people to these stages? Number one, so for those who don't know, the reason why a lot of us woke up that morning upset is because we had a meeting for all.
Yeah. Right?
What we have been doing on Wednesdays is invited and open to our whole community because we want to know what the whole community thinks so we can take those thoughts, take them, put them into a strategy, organize them with some of the work and the great work that Royal and others do, and then mobilize those plans. And with that, we went to a tactic that we felt that we've needed to use to appease a demographic of people that's not ours with press conferences,
right,
and speaking on gun violence and gang violence being our biggest issue. What do you guys think that we have to do to change that and, in times, snatch those mics? What are some of those things?
Hey, you know I talk about this all the time.
Let's talk about it now.
I don't bite my tongue. Yeah. And I say, at a certain point, and I say this because, you know, I kind of sit in that generation between the old guard and y'all. And I just like y'all because y'all got the passion for change. But again, and I've told this to a lot of people, sometimes with a certain old cats, the only currency they have left is legacy. And that legacy is something that will keep them from saying, okay, bro, it's your turn. And at certain times, you hope you can ally with somebody that can help them be that bridge. But at other times, you just got to say, get down or lay down. And if they don't understand, you have to show them. Now, and I was thinking about this. It's funny you said that, because I was thinking the one challenge we always face when they don't want to do that is those institutional soft skills. And by that, I mean the people, well, this person, if you don't come to them and kind of say it like this, they'll make it hard for you. Or this is who you talk to when you need this help. Or let me pull this coattail for you. And like I said, and I think I told you this, Sam, too often they want everybody to come kiss the ring. But you taught me how to stand up to be a man. So what's the problem?
As a man, ain't no ring kissing happening around here,
no,
fella.
No.
So,
no.
Sean, what do you think?
I mean, I think I was lucky to have a leader that was a leader for those 30 years, then passed me the mantle at an age before he died, while he was still effective, but still gave me the mantle. Because he understood, in the words, his exact words was, hey, man, you're younger than me, you're stronger than me, you can run farther than me right now. Let me give you the tools and go. Like Royal said, I think a lot of these people now have took on, that's their identity. This is their identity. So they don't want to let it go. This is their legacy. They don't want to let it go. But yet they're doing the same things that they bumped their head on for numerous years. And so it's not changing. So it's that, hey, bring us to the table. Give us your knowledge. We want to hear some of your knowledge if you bring us to the table. But it also, on the other end, it is that get down or lay down, get out the way or the train's going to run over you. Because at this moment, I think our community depends on this. And we can't go through that back and forth and I need to be in front of the press conference. Who are we press conferencing for? That's my first question. I don't watch the news like that. So that's not helping us at all. So we got to get back to the ground roots of what is best for the community, what is best for us as a whole, and not I'm on TV or I got to call the shot and all that kiss the ring, which ain't happening. So, yeah, I think we got to get back to that.
But I think – I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah. I think is part of – from their side, because we got to look at both sides. And like I said, I sit in both circles, is being ready isn't enough to be in charge of the destiny of a community. You got to be prepared with a strategy. You can't. And I think one of the things that happens with younger generations now, the outrage gets way more energy and focus than the solution. And again, I think what we're saying about the tough, arduous task of creating the solution. It's easy to tell me what's wrong and how they didn't do it and give me that line item of how they didn't do it. But now that you in charge of it and all those forces that they were against are in front of you.
Now you got to do it.
Now you got to do it. And you can't quit because you already called them out and at least they crossed their finish line.
If you're just tuning in, that was a segment from a community discussion hosted by Sam Thompson featuring Deshaun Hardy and Royal Harris. You can catch the full interview this Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. And you can be a part of the discussion at Wilshire Park every Wednesday at 6 p.m. as Black Men and Women United meet to focus on creating the change in policy to strengthen our community.
Make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Arrest Jonathan Mattingly, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Arrest Brett Hankinson, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
This episode also features Sam Thompson, Deshaun Hardy, and Royal Harris.
Arrest Miles Cosgrove, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Shireen Hassan, Sham Sharon, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson.
Arrest and convict the cops that killed Breonna Taylor.
Stop playing, y'all. Music by C.
We're out.
We out.